My name is Mark Ruskin on behalf of the proponents who are.
Anthony Milo.
James Moody.
For the record, the proponents have introduced themselves. Their affidavits are on record. I would ask, Madam Chair, as to our motion on proposed initiative number 26, that it incorporate by reference our arguments on initiative number 23, and that a ballot title be set to reflect the changes that the board has either considered or adopted, about which we have spoken.
Mr. Paul Hill, anything beyond incorporating your comments, including your arguments on jurisdiction?
Yes, please incorporate it. Thank
right.
you.
That will be done. And
okay, so on line 8, to strike the word equally, I make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So I would move that we deny Mr. Gruskin's motion for rehearing on number 26 in all respects. And as to Mr. Polhill's motion for rehearing on number 26, to deny in all respects except for the change that we made.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, that takes us to 2017-2018, number 27, transportation funding.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Gruskin, counsel for the proponents who are.
Anthony Milo.
James Moody.
For the record, both individuals have introduced themselves and are present. Their affidavits are on file with the secretary. Initiative 27 is analogous to initiative 23, about which the board has heard argument over the motions for rehearing. We would restate for the record or ask that our comments on initiative number 23 be incorporated for the record here on initiative, the title for initiative number 27.
All right, and Mr. Polhill, anything beyond incorporating your comments, including your argument on jurisdiction?
Yeah, please incorporate, thank you.
All right, those arguments from 23 will be incorporated.
Okay, so I would move on line 8 to strike the word equally.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Then I would move that we deny Mr. Gruskin's motion for rehearing on number 27 in all respects. And as to Mr. Polhill's motion for rehearing, to deny in all respects except for the change we made.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that one also passes unanimously, taking us to 2017-2018, number 28, transportation funding.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Ruskin, counsel for the proponents who are.
Anthony Milo.
James Moody.
For the record, both individuals just introduced themselves. They are present and their affidavits are on record. I would ask that comments from, or the discussion and the legal and title-based arguments from Initiative 23 be incorporated by reference here. This is an initiative, as the board knows, that deals with infrastructure, funding of infrastructure improvements rather than transportation improvements. We believe that it is a single subject, and the board correctly so found at its hearing on April 19th. We would ask that the board find that this is a single subject and set an appropriate title in light of our comments on the 19th and today.
And Mr. Polhill, anything you would like to say on this one beyond what we would incorporate from your argument on 23 as well as your objection to jurisdiction?
Please incorporate. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That will be done.
Oh. So I would move that we strike the word equally on line 8.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
And then I would move that we deny Mr. Gruskin's motion for rehearing on number 28 in all respects. And as to Mr. Polhill's motion for rehearing, to deny in all respects except for the change we made.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right, and that one passes unanimously. On number 28, which should actually be infrastructure funding. That takes us to initiative 2017-2018, number 21, authorizing bonds for transportation projects. Oh, that's right. We need to switch staff, so we'll take just a second. I guess I no. And for the record, Ms. Eubanks, who was here on 23 through 27, is being substituted by Mr. Gallander from Legislative Legal, and I should have introduced all of us at the beginning. Mr. Blake from the Attorney General's Office has been here the entire time, and I'm Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State, and I will continue for the rest of the measures. So we're on 2017, 2018, number 21, authorized bonds for transportation projects. Our proponents?
Thank you, members of the board. We're still waiting for Mr. Caldera to waddle down the street. We did not expect the others to be quite so hurriedly. So Shane Madsen for the record.
Do you know how long he's going to be?
He says he's 5 minutes away.
All right. Yeah, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back.
And we're ready to go.
All right, we're going to go back on the record on initiative 2017-2018, number 21. Proponents?
Hi.
Seems
there.
Really up your alley, so.
Why are we here? What can I do for you?
Well, if you are the proponent, you could introduce yourself.
I am the proponent. I'm John Caldera. I'm here with Mike Krause.
And
Shane Madsen from Jackson Kelly, appearing as counsel. Both of the proponents have signed the affidavit. Of course, Mr. Krause went out in the hallway, so we're waiting for him to physically come back in the room. I am so sorry for this.
Oh, that's okay. Mr. Gruskin, do you have any problems starting with him out in the hallway? It's up to you. We can wait if you want.
I think it's probably jurisdictional, so.
If he's physically here. Yeah.
Hallway, or maybe he can be retrieved, or so we can. Excellent.
Okay. Do you want to play a game show in the meantime? Or?
I'll trade you for what's in number three. I've never made Steve Ward laugh. So this is like,
really?
Yeah, this is the best day of my life.
Yeah.
Best day.
It's Mr. I thought Mr. Blake was the challenge.
Well, Steve is Pikes Peak, Mr. Blake is Everest, what did I say?
I guess it's not a.
Waiting for Mr.
Oh, okay. Well, I think everyone's here now. So, Mr. Gruskin, you have filed a motion. Do you want to take us through your motion?
I'd be happy to, Madam Chair. Initiative 21 and Initiative 22 vary only in the dollar amounts that they utilize for bonded indebtedness. They require require the Transportation Commission to issue bonds in the stated amounts. And then they provide for funding through either a plumbing of certain transportation projects or a reallocation of funds from the general fund or both. There is no way that you could float those bonds in either amount without having a revenue source to repay them. And therefore, there is a mandatory reduction of some state funding from two designated sources. We think, based upon the case law, that where there is a mandatory reduction in state funding, that it is a subject different from, particularly where it's going to be a Tabor issue like this one, which calls for bonded indebtedness, for the very reason that there, in number one, it's concealed. You would have no way of knowing that as a voter. But, and therefore, the combination of the two subjects is going to definitely surprise some folks who vote for new bonds for transportation improvements without having any idea that they are simultaneously authorizing a reduction in state programs. That's number one. I would respond to the response to the motion, but it was delivered to me about just a matter of moments ago while we were waiting for one of the two proponents. So I can't honestly say that I've done much more than glance at it, but the purported limits placed upon the case law cited in our motion simply do not apply. This isn't an issue, as was true in certain initiatives, where there was something other than a mandatory, there was a discretionary reduction in state funding. This is certainly not initiative number 255, which, for the record, I happen to know about because I was counsel for the proponents there. That was the closing the gun show loophole. There was a fee that was to address the licensure of such individuals. It certainly wasn't a $4 or $5 billion fiscal impact on the state. And the court found, notwithstanding the language that cited, that such an impact was not a separate subject. and then there is also language, unfortunately the pages are not numbered, I believe it's pages 2 to 3. They seem to discuss at some length the cases that we have cited, noting that it was a different set of provisions. It was local tax cuts and paying for them out of state revenues. I'll admit to you readily, there were different facts there. The principle is the same. If you have a mandatory reduction in state spending and it's not directly indicated by the measure, except as to language in the measure which voters would not discern from the title, it is a second subject, and it is the kind of subject that would allow for voters who have some sort of issue with either of the sources of the general fund or transportation projects to support this kind of reduction in the state budget. So we would argue that it violates the single subject requirement and that you send them back to the drawing board.
So then, Mr. Gruskin, is it your position that the only way you could ever issue bonds like this would be in conjunction with a tax increase? And somehow that would be one subject.
I believe that if you had an anticipated surplus such that there was going to be a refund, that the answer to your question would be, yes, you could fund it that way without having a mandatory reduction. Likewise, if you made the floating of such indebtedness discretionary, rather than to have said that the commission was required to see that such bonds were floated, if you gave them the authority to do so, then I think that you could allow for a reduction in state funding without making it mandatory. So I think there are alternatives, Madam Chair.
And how do you know we're not going to have a $5 billion surplus?
Fortunately, we have fiscal analysts here to advise the board about that. I think that there is no construct under which the state has ever had a $5 billion surplus.
Any other questions?
Yes, I just want to know how this measure, in the case you've cited, Outselt v. Bruce, or was it from 1998, we forced essentially a reduction in states, mandatory reduction in state spending because the state was under an obligation to essentially backfill local governments for money they lost. Where's the reduction in state spending here?
The issue is that you don't know. I mean, honestly, to the extent that what this requires is a reallocation, there will still be some state funding, but it may well be channeled through other programs, local programs, county programs for funding.
But doesn't that apply to almost any initiative that requires the state to do anything? So if we had an initiative to, I don't know, require mandatory pre-K, full-day kindergarten, or to increase prison sentences for certain crimes, or to expand eligibility for Medicaid, all those things would force the state to reallocate other resources, most likely. And how is that? How are any of those things multiple subjects?
I would simply suggest to you that the case law is relatively clear that those cases didn't depend upon the fact that the overall state budget was being affected, but that there was a reallocation that was part of a different proposal that had a different objective. And the reduction of, let's use K through 12 education in terms of a fairly large pot. The reduction in education funding or in Medicaid funding in order to fund roads, there's no reasonable relationship to the objective of maintenance or construction for roads and bridges.
Any questions?
Nope.
All right. Ms. Mattson, did you want to respond at all, or standing on your Mr. Calder.
If I may first. As usual, Mark brings up wonderful points, which will be terrific during an actual campaign when talking to voters. The question here is the title. One, we're in a budget surplus year. We will be in budget surplus years. But also, I believe it's a false dichotomy to say that we need to show that we're going to be cutting funding someplace else. That's not true. What that means is that we have a stagnant model inside our government, that there cannot be savings from changing the way we do things. As a former chairman of RTD, we realized, for instance, 40% savings when we contracted out bus services in a competitive bid process. There's all sorts of issues that can be done here. So to say that the only way to do this is to cut services elsewhere, we don't know. It will be up to the legislature to make that. So the question, what this does, and the original purpose of this, was to use the bonding for transportation funding to reprioritize road spending. That doesn't change. Let me ask Ms. Mattson to add to anything on that.
Thank you, Shane Mattson, for the record. We do believe that it is a single subject. We believe the cases that the opponents have cited before you deal with mandatory state reductions. In this case, this measure merely gives the legislature permissive direction to use their discretion to reallocate among state budgetary items. It is not a mandatory and permanent reduction as the measures were in the cases cited by Mr. Gruskin.
Motion.
Sure. Why don't you?
Yes.
Motion.
I would move that the board denies the objector's motion for rehearing on a proposed initiative 2017-18 number 21 to the extent that alleges that the initiative does not have a single subject, that we find that the initiative does have a single subject, and that we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, Mr. Grusin, let's move on to the language.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mark Rutzkin. I think we've been fairly clear, and unlike the last objector, tried to help the board with proposed language. The notion that without raising taxes is somehow indicative of what is contained in this measure is, we believe, incorrect. And therefore, we have suggested that at bare minimum, that phrase, without raising taxes, be expanded to make it clear that there's no source of revenue. There was reference in an earlier hearing about how local voters are used to seeing tax or bonded indebtedness increases that are associated with some sort of source of revenue to offset that bond repayment. There is nothing in here except the language that is reflected in the measure itself, which is not reflected in the title. And therefore, voters would have no way of knowing that it is virtually certain that money will come out of the state budget. So we would suggest that the language in A is appropriate. We would suggest that the language in B adds additional clarity about where the money is designated by the measure itself to come from. There is no language in the measure, oh, by the way, that it ought to come from revenue surpluses or anything else. So these are the only two sources, either the transportation programs or the general fund. And then lastly, self-executing it when you do a statute is a misnomer. The case law says that self-executing in a statute indicates that there is no government involved in the implementation of the statute. Well, there's no question that there is government involvement here, and therefore self-executing is used for the purpose of indicating that this is somehow immune, that the measure is immune from some sort of further amendment. And we think voters ought to know that there is an attempt, whether it is legally effective or not is open to question, but there is an attempt here to somehow immunize this from further legislative change.
If I may, the job here today is to accurately reflect the ballot measure. We said without raising taxes, because that's what's in the measure. To say any other revenue source, well, we don't know what cost-saving measures the legislature will do. This gives the legislature discretion. And I understand the idea of trying to put in campaigning points into a ballot initiative language, but this is simply not accurate to this. It is up to the legislature to decide how to fund this. Maybe it's through budget cuts, maybe it's through innovation, maybe it's through reprioritization, but to say that it needs to be identified does not reflect the proposal. If you wanted to put in without raising taxes or fees, fine, but to add any of this language is not accurate to the purpose of the measure.
I have nothing really further to add with respect to the points Mr. Caldera raised. The self-executing has to go with the issuance of the bonds. There are no additional legislative steps that need to be taken nor legislation adopted for the bonds to be issued.
All right. Any questions from anyone on the board? For either?
Not from me.
Okay. I think I'll make a preliminary statement, which is, this is quite an interesting situation because I think we have ordinarily, and I think I brought it up last time, maybe not, I'm not big on including language about what an initiative doesn't do, without raising taxes. But in this particular context, we have a likelihood, or at least the possibility, of competing measures on the ballot, with one of the major distinctions between them being that one raises taxes and one doesn't. And I think this has also been in the context of the legislative debate over this, where that's been sort of at the core of that debate also. Everybody wants to fund roads. The question is, do we want to use new revenue to pay for it or reallocate existing revenue? So for that reason, while I'm not necessarily inclined to adopt Mr. Gruskin's language, for example, I don't know that we need to repeat the rather large dollar number in either of these, or use terms like diversion, I am inclined to possibly add a little bit more, or at least willing to add a bit more detail to this in the interest of distinguishing it a bit more from the other set of transportation initiatives that titles were set for today.
So would that be something like without raising taxes but reallocating existing, or what's your language?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I've got great language, and I think I want to hear from the proponents what they think about the general concept of doing a little more to distinguish these, or from both sides, really.
I believe the way that the board did this the first time is appropriate and fine, because it leaves it to the legislature. If it's to reallocate funds or to, through efficiencies in government, I mean, we can play with those. I think the way it was originally worded is just fine and most accurate to the intent and the language.
Just a moment. There is language, however, in the initiative that does get a bit specific about the payment, in the sense there's this one clause: to the extent possible, the state shall use available federal funds. That's on the bottom of page 2 of the initiative itself. That seems like a mandate to pay these notes first from presumably federal transportation funds, and then from either reallocation of priorities in the budget or been used before for these types of notes.
I wouldn't call it a requirement that it first go from federal funds. The language there, the clause there, is to give the legislature the ultimate amount of leeway we can in doing this and making it clear that federal dollars can be used in this project or on their projects, should they choose or should they not choose.
I mean, I hesitate to say anything about federal funds because it makes it sound like taxpayers, they don't need to worry about it because the federal government's going to give us funding. I don't know, it just seems, I don't know, Mr. Gruskin, if you have a...
I'm sensitive to the chairman's concern that somehow reference just to federal funds would indicate that it's a freebie. A, that it's legal, and B, that it's free, a free undertaking. I think that I'm sensitive to Mr. Caldera's concerns about not including some language, but there is literally no new source of revenue. And I think you could take that without raising taxes phrase and simply expand it without raising taxes or any new source of revenue. Because if there is a reprioritization of objectives and funding, that's not new revenue. That's a shuffling of existing revenue. And I think in about 5 words you can get in the entire concept without doing violence to my best case scenario or Mr. Caldera's
language. Yeah, but there could be, I mean, the federal government could decide to double our funding for transit. I mean, there could be new revenue. I mean, maybe not within what we predict and what our economist predicts, but I mean, there could be funding sources that are new that we are not anticipating. I guess I don't mind the reallocation language as much as I want to imply that there is or isn't going to be.
The problem with the reallocation language is that it is, unless you make it clear that there are a set source of possibilities from which the legislature can choose, then any language you choose will necessarily be misleading, because whether it's just federal dollars or it just talks about reallocation, it will necessarily tell the voters a piece of the puzzle that the legislature is supposed to solve with this measure.
Yeah. I mean, in that case, I think I'm inclined to leave it because I can't start to explain the legislative budget process in 3 or 5 or 8 or 108 words. I mean, I just...
Madam Chair, we suggest that you strike without raising taxes, because this measure is, by its terms, fundamentally different than initiatives 23 through 28, which begin with a
tax increase. Shall taxes be increased by $750 million? There is no confusion in these two measures. This one only talks about that. And therefore, we would suggest that without raising taxes is simply a throwaway. And it is fascinating in this response to our motion that the proponents chose a proposed bill that uses the phrase, and then a series of local measures that have nothing to do with a bonded indebtedness increase. Without raising taxes is language that is used for political purposes at the local level in order to assist voters to understand that they are not being asked to look at a tax increase, which, oh, by the way, you cannot avoid in initiatives 23 through 28. Shall taxes be increased? You don't need that language.
If I may, Mark. Yes, it is fascinating. It is fascinating that there will be a contrast between these competing measures, and voters need to understand that. To say that there are other, without any other revenue source, again, uses a static model. There might be other revenue sources. There could be the federal government that comes in. There could be efficiencies that could be found. And I have spent the last 20 years working on such ideas. The idea without raising taxes is crucial to this initiative. And we have provided many, many such examples. And we can go back to the original referendum C language and referendum D language. We can go back to what has been dropped just recently in Senate Bill 303 of language of not raising taxes. This is a crucial part of this proposal, that it does not raise taxes.
Can I just make one comment for the record? There is nothing in this measure that actually says taxes are not to be increased.
It doesn't effectively do that. But the board's obligation is not to say what it doesn't do, I think to the points raised last time. There's no specific language, taxes shall not be increased for this purpose. This is a throwaway phrase for political positioning and not necessary to voter understanding in light of what you've done on 23 to 20.
It is crucial to voter understanding of this initiative.
Any comments?
So, Mr. Grusin, are you changing then your argument from what you made in your rehearing to a catchphrase argument? You've said now political purposes or political several times. And if that's the case, how did it survive in the local ballot initiatives?
First of all, there is no ballot title review except that it not be misleading at the local level.
Yeah, it could have been challenged. There's enough of them there. Are you changing your argument, or that's my real question?
No, I'm giving the board an alternative to the language that I chose, that I suggested in the measure. Without raising taxes is, it's a political hook, and if the proponents were so concerned about it, they would have undoubtedly put an express provision in there. It simply is not the task or the objective, the statutory objective, to say what doesn't happen in a measure.
Cannot be a political catchphrase. We intentionally wrote it right into the initiative.
Well, you wrote your initiative title, and we wouldn't use that either.
That's true.
Yeah, it is in there. It is express. I don't think it's a catchphrase, because I don't know how else to say it without raising taxes. It's without raising taxes. It's fairly plain meaning. Now, whether or not someone's creative enough to turn it into a political phrase, we've dealt with that, and we've never, at least not as long as I've been on, made that to be the determinative factor. I guess I go back to Mr. Gelinder's point about whether or not he wants to make a suggestion of language. I mean, I'm fine with it as it is, but if you think that Mr. Grushkin's point that there needs to be further explanation, even though his suggestions are unacceptable to you, I guess I'm curious to see what it is you suggest. And it seems to me the only thing that you could draw from is the legislative reallocation and prioritization language, because it comes from the measure. But I don't know
if it would be helpful. The measure does say specifically without raising taxes or fees. If we wish to put in the term or fees, I'm fine with that as well.
Well, I think my suggestion would be the reallocation part. I don't see that much. The chances of generating confusion in this broad an area probably don't make it worth it. What I would suggest, and I guess I will propose something, I think I would add the ore fees. The measure does say that. And then on the other side, just say, instead of only without raising taxes, if we're going to talk about things that aren't in there, I don't buy Mr. Caldera's argument about other revenue somehow being generated. I don't think cost savings or new revenue, they're just savings, and the measure doesn't specifically suggest, I mean, other sources may come available, but that doesn't have anything to do with the measure. So I'd suggest without raising taxes or fees or otherwise generating new state revenue. And again, part of the rationale is, I do think in this context that highlighting that this is the big difference, or a big difference between these and the other initiatives is likely to be helpful to the voters, notwithstanding Mr. Gruskin's valid point that the others do have to start with the very upfront tax increase language. I don't think in this case that belts and suspenders are unhelpful.
I don't know why we need the otherwise or otherwise creating new state revenue. I think for the point of clarity and brevity, without raising taxes or fees, covers that. And I worry that otherwise generating new state revenues doesn't accurately describe the initiative, because we do make allowance for federal revenue to be coming in, and who knows, I certainly hope with better roads, we'll be generating more revenue and with more business. So I don't think the otherwise generating new state revenue is accurate to the, I think it's confusing. Especially when you talk about federal funding.
Mr. Gruskin, why don't you?
Well, I think Mr. Gellender's language addresses Mr. Caldera's concern. There's the possibility that some dollar could flow to the state of Colorado. This measure doesn't generate that revenue. And in any event, the language is specific to state revenue. So we don't object to that. We think it's probably concise and accurate.
But we're dealing with voters, and if they don't understand the intricacies of the state revenue system, how that works with federal dollars coming through, I think can be confusing.
I don't think that's what the measure does. I think we're doubling down on the concern about saying what it doesn't do. What it does is defer to the General Assembly. I mean, that's what it does. And it just makes it a General Assembly problem in light of whatever facts there are that the General Assembly is dealing with. It may well be Mr. Gruskin's point that things get moved around. It may well be Mr. Caldera's point that there's additional revenues that happen to be available. I don't know how we can predict that and attempt to write that into the provision. And the way it functions is exactly what it says. The General Assembly shall identify and appropriate, shall reallocate and prioritize. I don't think that's what the provision does.
No, I think the objection for Mr. Gruskin is about the without raising taxes. I don't think this fixes his objection. So, I think we should just leave it.
Well, should I just move the language and have the vote on it? And...
Sure. All right. Do you want to separate fees and the other disjunctive clause, or do we?
I mean, it just seems to me that taxes are the only thing they can't raise without question, without asking a separate question. They could go raise fees. Just because this measure doesn't require new fees doesn't mean that the General Assembly couldn't turn around and make a toll road or something. I mean, they can go raise fees if they want. They can go generate new state revenue in another way if they want to do that. This didn't take away their discretion. It just didn't give them the authority to do it or attach it specifically to this question. The one thing they can't do is go raise a tax without...
Well, this isn't what prohibits them from that, though.
Well, I mean,
Tabor is what prohibits
right.
it. It's just sort
it's
of the same thing.
Making it sound like...
The issue is, I mean, I'm sensitive to, and which is why I sort of didn't want it in the first place, to Mr. Gruskin's concern, or actually it was Mr. Well, both of theirs concern probably the reality that without raising taxes is often used in these things, you know, to garner support as essentially a political phrase. It happens to be accurate in this point. And to me, the reason for including it and sort of overriding my general concern about its sort of nature towards garnering support for things is that we have this context of more clearly distinguishing these two initiatives from the other ones that you set titles for. But I'm still sort of aware of that political concern. The other context is that, you know, it's sort of a double-edged sword of, great, we're not raising taxes, but the voters should then also know, hey, we're not, this measure isn't bringing in anything to pay for this in any way. So I'm kind of trying to split the baby. That's where my logic is coming from.
I think I understand both points. I'm just not sure that we need to split a baby. I mean,
that's for the campaign.
Right, exactly. And I just don't see it. I can understand where it may get used as a catchphrase, but in the title, I don't see it that way. I don't know how else to say it. This is what we struggled with last time about defining the negative.
We
couldn't come up with another way to say it. And so we took it straight out of the, you know, what's a classic default for us is the default to the provision and go with the language in the provision, because at least that's consistent with the provision rather than getting into what might very well be a catchphrase or mischaracterizing or, you know, introducing a lack of clarity. And that's where we were before. I think I'm still there now. I'm kind of indifferent on or fees. Again, mostly because it comes straight out of the proposal. I would vote against the inclusion of the other phrase because I don't think that's what the provision does. I think the provision kicks this to the General Assembly, and the idea that we're going to predict how that's going to get resolved by the General Assembly isn't our job. That's a function of the proposal, be it right or wrong. I understand the points, but I have no basis to choose one side or the other because the way it will get solved is by the General Assembly. That's how I read it.
Want to try your motions?
Well, it would probably be easier to just have you guys reject it, but okay. I move that we adopt the changes as they currently appear on the screen.
All right.
What do I do there? I can't move it.
Well, you can second it for discussion purposes, or
and
you
I'll
can
second,
not second it.
I will. No, I'm not going to second it. I don't agree with it.
All right.
Madam Chair, for the record.
Well, then it dies for life.
Could the board put on the record what the language on the screen
sure,
is?
Sure.
The language on the screen is, I'll just read it. State debt shall be increased $2.5 billion with a maximum repayment of $4 billion without raising taxes, and then the new language would be or fees or otherwise generating new state revenue, comma by a change, dot dot dot. So, You moved it.
And it's been rejected for lack of a second.
And there's no second, so.
So Steve, I think you can take it off.
That takes us back to our original language.
All right.
So.
I do have one more suggestion, though. And this, again, is to, in the interest of avoiding voter confusion. Last time we set the title as transportation bonds on line four. In the other measure, we've used the, I know perhaps more technical, but seen by voters before and matching the language of the initiative, transportation revenue anticipation notes. But this measure and the other ones, they're talking about asking permission to issue the same thing, so I think we should refer to them in the same way.
And I do too. But let's not get into multimodal.
I laugh.
Go ahead.
The only thing I would say about that, I understand your desire to have it be consistent on all these initiatives, but transportation revenue anticipation notes was a clever bit of wording created for the Trans Bonds Initiative so that we could come up with an acronym. They're going to go into the bonding market. They're not going to go out into the transportation revenue anticipation notes market. I've never seen that column in the Wall Street Journal. So I just think for simplicity's sake, we ought to call it what it is, which is bonding.
Well, and I would have agreed with you, but I lost on round two. And so now I think we have to match these questions up to avoid confusion.
I agree because it was used in the measure. You didn't use bonds.
All right, so I guess I move.
Whenever I'm there, I go to the measure.
I never go to the measure.
Why we agree all the time.
Also, we never mentioned, I don't believe you mentioned that term in the measure. So it's in there. Actually reflects it.
Yeah, it's. The executive director of the Department of Transportation shall issue revenue anticipation notes.
No, I didn't
like
that.
Well,
you're the proponent for it, right?
Yeah.
Must have been an attorney. Sorry.
I mean, I understand the idea that you want this to be consistent. I just wish it was consistent the other way.
Fair enough. I move that we adopt the change on the board where instead of saying requiring the issuance of transportation bonds, it says requiring the issuance of transportation revenue anticipation notes, and then down below also changes the word bond to note.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right.
Done.
You want to move the rehearing then?
Yes. Let's see. And I guess, I'm not quite sure what the motion is. I mean, we didn't adopt any of the suggested language. So
well, I think the motion is to deny except to the extent on the screen.
Okay. All right. I move that the board rejects the motion for rehearing except to the extent that we've amended the title and that we adopt the title as it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right. That takes us to Initiative 2017-2018, number 22, authorized bonds for transportation projects. And Mr. Caldera, you want to start by introducing yourself?
I'm John Caldera, president.
Is that microphone on?
And submission clause, too. Then we'll get it.
Right. If it's not working, then you'll have to come up here.
John Caldera, the proponent of this measure. Mike Krause, the other proponent, is here in the room.
And for purposes of the record, would you like to incorporate all your arguments and comments on number 21?
No, I'd like to very slowly repeat them all. Yes, I incorporate everything I said last time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gruskin? We're having technical difficulties, so.
Madam Chair, Mark Gruskin on behalf of Mr. Milo, the objector. We would likewise incorporate by reference our objections, both in the motion for rehearing and the comments made as to initiative number 21.
Anything new you want to add, Mr. Gruskin? Probably not, huh? I should have asked you while you were standing there.
Why would you give him the opportunity?
Because
they like me. That's why.
We all like
him. I know, John. Only that I think the board, upon reflection, probably would come to the conclusion that Mr. Gellender's proposed change was warranted, and we would ask that you adopt it.
Anything further from you, Mr. Gellender?
No.
All right. Okay. Want to make a motion?
Sure. I guess I move that we reject the motion for rehearing, except to the extent that we're going to make similar changes to the title for 22 that we did for 21, which then is, well, will be on the screen soon enough.
Okay. The changes are on the board. So, do you want to finish your motion?
Like I did.
Oh, the changes on the board.
Yes.
Which are changing bonds to revenue anticipation notes and then down below bond a note?
Yes.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Right. That one passes unanimously, and on all of these measures, we will be changing the submission clause along with the title. Thank you. And that brings us to Initiative 2017-2018, number 20, severance taxes on oil and gas.
So if we can take a short recess to address the battery issue on the microphones and
sure.
The designated representatives for that are not currently present.
Okay.
Although I've been informed that one of them is on the way, which I'm sure is why the other one left.
Okay. We'll take a brief recess and then...
Are we recording?
Are we?
Yes, we're going right now.
All right. We are back in session on 2017-2018, number 20. For the record, I'm still here. Ms. Eubanks has joined us again. Mr. Blake is here from the Attorney General's office. The time is 2:20. We finished our last matter at about 2:00, and we are waiting for the other proponent. So, Mr. O'Connor, could you please come up and, or just give us some status.
Okay, yes, she's on 36, and she says she's on her way. So I told her that everybody's waiting on her, and I told her to drive as fast as she could.
Well, I don't know if I want her to drive as fast as she can, but Mr. Dunn, do you have any comment you want to make, or? No. All right. And I mean, I'm personally okay waiting a little bit, but I mean.
For the record, Jason Dunn on behalf of the objector. You know, I certainly want to be accommodating. My sense is that we're probably looking at if she just left Boulder, you know, we're talking about 45 minutes at least, which is at least a full hour after the end of the last hearing. So I'll leave it to the board's discretion, I guess.
Okay. I mean, I'm inclined in the past, we have waited about a half an hour for proponents. I don't know, Ms. Eubanks, if you want to.
Yeah.
So we're going to reconvene at 2:45, but if she's not here, I don't know, you know, you can give us an update at that point, but.
Okay, and just for the record, she left Lafayette, lived in Lafayette.
So it's Lafayette, not Boulder, so that's, you know, somewhat closer.
Okay, so we're willing to go till 2:40. I mean, hopefully she'll be here sooner than that. Okay. If we get to 2:45, though, we may need another update.
So we'll be adjourned till 2:45.
Someone have a charger.
We're back on the record.
Okay, this is Andrea O'Connor. I have her on speakerphone. She's parking right now. She's downtown. Do you want to hear her voice? Okay.
No, that's okay. We just need to know if she's close. Okay. So.
Thank you.
I don't know.